Welcome to the Cancer Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Stephanie, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, Living with Myeloproliferative Neoplasms, or MPN. And this is a six-part series, and this is part five, and today's program is titled Helping Children and Teens Cope with MPN in the Family. Now, this is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations, including the MPN Education Foundation and the MPN Research Foundation, but many other organizations as well. And it's because of that collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. So we have on the call today over 374 participants, and you come from all of the United States, from all different parts of this country, and we also have international participants from Australia, Canada, Tunisia, the United Kingdom, and Venezuela. So you really come from all over the world, and it's a credit to you that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us. Now, today's program is made possible by the Insight Corporation, and indeed they have made possible this entire six-part series. We really want to thank them for their support of this series. I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials that we received from Cancer Care. In those materials is information about our speakers, about the topics they'll be addressing, and about all of the different collaborating organizations as a resource for all of you to utilize, and their free resources to get help from as in addition to Cancer Care. Now, there also is an evaluation form, and I would ask you all to please complete that evaluation form. I mean, your feedback is really critically important to us as we plan many more programs this year. Indeed, this six-part series, which is really the first time we've been able to do a six-part series on MPN, is really a credit to all of you because you've asked us to offer this topic and to offer both the medical updates on MPN, but also to offer some of the more practical and social and emotional aspects of dealing with MPN. And so we've had a number of different calls on these subjects, and today's particularly helping children and teens cope with MPN in the family. Now, we have wonderful speakers today. I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Christina Gowan. And Dr. Gowan is with the Mayo Clinic of Arizona, hematology and medical oncology fellow, MPN researcher. And Dr. Gowan is going to present a brief overview of myeloproliferative neoplasms, or MPNs. And it's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Gowan.
Thank you very much for that very kind introduction, and thank you all for joining me on this teleconference today focusing on myeloproliferative neoplasms. Let's begin on discussing what are myeloproliferative neoplasms, or for short, MPNs. In Latin, the word myelo refers to bone marrow, which is essentially the body's blood cell factory. Proliferative refers to the rapid growth and production of cells. And finally, neoplasm means abnormal growth of cells. So taken together, the phrase myeloproliferative neoplasm really means an abnormal increased growth and production of bone marrow and blood cells. So what makes up the bone marrow? The bone marrow is a system within the large bones of your body that produces the body's blood elements. There are three main cells produced in the bone marrow. Number one, the red blood cells, which carry oxygen throughout the body and is also called hemoglobin. Number two, white blood cells, which help the body fight infection. And number three, platelets, which help the body form blood clots when injured and help to stop bleeding. The bone marrow is an organ with a delicate balance of all three of these elements within the microenvironment, which can be looked at as the soil of the bone marrow. The diagnosis of myeloproliferative neoplasm, or MPN, encompasses three separate illnesses, which include essential thrombocytosis, or ET, polycythemia vera, or PV, and myelofibrosis, or MF. They each have different disruptions within the bone marrow, and subsequently, in blood cell formation. ET is associated with elevation of platelets. PV is associated with elevation of red blood cells, white blood cells, and platelets. And finally, MF disrupts the bone marrow microenvironment and leads to scarring, leading to decreased ability of the bone marrow to let the blood cells out into the bloodstream, actually leading to low blood cell counts. So what happens when one has abnormal production of blood cells? Too many red blood cells, white blood cells, and platelets can lead to the formation of blood clots, while too many platelets, when extremely high, can paroxysmally lead to increased risk of bleeding. Additionally, abnormal cell production in organs outside the bone marrow occur, causing enlargement of other organs, such as the spleen and the liver. Sometimes the breakdown of excess cells can cause release of chemicals and can cause severe itching. And rarely, abnormal cell production can lead to a type of leukemia called acute myeloid leukemia, or AML. So what do those afflicted with NPNs experience? Symptoms such as headache, dizziness, itchy skin and skin rash, both abdominal pain and feeling full quickly from an enlarged spleen, severe fatigue, night sweats, and bone pain may occur. ET, or essential thrombocytosis, tends to be the least symptomatic, followed by PV, and finally myelofibrosis, which tends to be the most symptomatic of the group. How do we treat myeloproliferative disease? Generally, agents to decrease the production of bone marrow elements are utilized, including meds such as hydroxyurea, anagrelide, or interferon. Those afflicted with polycythemia vera, excess red blood cells are removed by simply removing blood from the body on a scheduled basis. Iron is the raw material that is needed to make more red blood cells. By removing blood, iron is removed from the body and essentially shuts down the bone marrow factory. In those with elevated platelets, a daily baby aspirin is typically prescribed to decrease the risk of forming blood clots. In 2005, a genetic change in the myeloproliferative neoplasm blood cells was detected, namely the JAK2 mutation. Researchers found this mutation to be a switch that turns the bone marrow factory on. JAK inhibitor therapy, such as a medication called ruxolitinib, or Jakafi, is a medication that targets cells with the abnormal mutation and turns the factory off. This has proven to be a significant advance in the treatment of myeloproliferative disease. Finally, bone marrow transplant, a very high-risk procedure, can potentially cure the disease, but is only offered to specially selected patients afflicted with myelofibrosis. Many trials are ongoing, investigating new drugs, new combinations of drugs, and seeking to expand approval of effective drugs to do new diagnoses. In summary, NPN is a disease associated with overproduction and imbalance of the bone marrow. Treatment involves suppressing the bone marrow or by targeting specific abnormal cells. Much interest exists within the medical community currently with efforts to identify new molecular targets and new medications for the treatment of this disease. It is truly a time of change in NPNs, with many novel treatment options on our horizon.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gowan. That's really excellent and very, very comprehensive and very informative to know that there are many new treatments that are being developed. So thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Lori Wiener, and Dr. Wiener is Director, Psychosocial Support and Research Program, Staff Scientist, Pediatric Oncology Branch, Center for Cancer Research, National Cancer Institute. Dr. Wiener is going to address talking with children and teens about MPN, common questions children and teens ask, how to talk with your kids and answer their questions, the importance of providing age-appropriate information, and how children and teens respond. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Wiener, who I've known for many years, and has really carved out this area of expertise in the psychosocial sphere. So I'm really delighted to have Dr. Wiener with us today.
Well, thank you very much, Carolyn, and I'm very happy to be able to join you today. There are no adequate words to describe the overwhelming emotions that are experienced when someone learns that a family member is diagnosed with MPN. The time immediately after a diagnosis or even a possible diagnosis is often one of anxiety, distress, uncertainty, or confusion, and it takes time to absorb and to understand the information unfolding before helping one's child to understand and absorb what changes might occur. If you're listening to this teleconference, you or someone you love is likely living with MPN, and there are children affected. Please know that you are not alone. The most important message I hope you take away from today is that open communication and honesty are essential. Many parents stress about the exact words to use when they talk to their child about MPN, but the words are really less important than the fact that the parent takes the time to both sit down and talk with their child and to listen. The goal is to pave a road so that open communication can be established and maintained both ways. Being honest doesn't necessarily mean telling everything, especially when the child isn't ready to hear. It means not telling a lie. Another important message to take home is that parents know their child better than anyone else does. So while you may be receiving a lot of advice, solicited or not, over time, parents know their child best, and this includes how he or she reacts to different situations and conversations. And while I'll be using the word parents, please know that this includes loving adults, guardians, grandparents, aunts and uncles, whoever is caring for a child day to day. So let's begin by the question of when to talk to your child. Depending on a child's cognitive and emotional development, as well as parental preferences, children may or may not be included in early discussions. When the child's not present, one of the greatest challenges that parents face is deciding what to tell their child. And questions such as, how much should I tell my child, what words should I use, and what if I fall apart myself, are commonly asked. Many parents choose to wait until they have a better handle on what the treatment plan is, while others choose to talk to the child immediately. When the prognosis is expected to be poor out of a sense of protection, a parent's first inclination is to shield their child from any prognostic information. Children, however, are often aware when something has changed by how their parents are acting. They will notice if their parent seems distracted. They will notice when their parents are on the phone more or seem irritable, sad, or worried. Mostly, they may sense that some information is being withheld. Therefore, to ensure trust, the best practice is to start the journey of sharing information early with words the child will understand. And a good rule of thumb is to start the conversation as soon as changes are happening in the home that could affect the child. So who should talk to the child? Both parents or a parent and another familiar trusted adult can tell the child about the illness together. Since it can be difficult to initiate the conversation, many parents have found that writing down what they want to say beforehand can be helpful in case they kind of get stuck. Some parents also like to practice what they're going to say with someone before they sit down with their child. If you think it could be helpful, medical personnel, including nurses and social workers, are often available to help with this conversation. Where to have a conversation? If possible, a familiar and comfortable setting where there are not a lot of distractions is always best. Having a place where it's easy to give hugs or hold the child is also important. Parents know the place where their child will feel most comfortable having a difficult conversation, and children will need to hear an explanation multiple times, often from various people. So the first conversation very well may be the first of many. So next, what to say. And here I'll review differences based on the child's age and experiences, but there are certain things that we have learned should be included in this first conversation for children of all ages. The first is that the parent or family member is ill, that a name is given to the illness, and it's good to use a word that they'll be hearing from others, that MPN, whatever word you use, is not contagious, that nothing they did, thought, felt, or imagined caused whoever is ill to get sick. And last, that all questions are welcome. And there are a lot of different age-appropriate ways to describe the illness. For example, for a younger child, you may explain cells as being like weeds and healthy cells as like flowers. This way, you could be able to use different analogies to be able to talk about treatments. But with an older child, you may want to go to the web in advance to find an explanation you like or to the resource room at your hospital for materials. How the information is presented is important. Ideally, parents should present the information to their child as calmly and honestly as possible. Euphemisms and other attempts to protect the child from the harsh realities of a diagnosis or an illness is not helpful. an honest approach not only paves the way for more open communication within the family, it increases the likelihood of cooperation with what needs to take place medically and decreases the chance that the child's sense of secrets are being held. Family stress could also be better managed once the child understands and accepts the diagnosis. Yet parents have to agree on the words to use, otherwise all information provided will be filtered through the lens of a child perceiving some parental strife. Yet not all parents, and parents from certain cultural backgrounds, will be comfortable with such candor. While most professionals feel that they must answer the child honestly in order to maintain trust, this is an individual choice. Again, most importantly, the child should be honestly prepared for changes that might occur in the home. And to think about the child's temperament. For example, how has your child dealt with smaller challenges such as a move, an illness, new babysitters, or a new school? Were one of these particularly traumatic for him or her? If so, what behavior changes were observed? This is useful information that helps us think about what to anticipate and how to support a child faced with a major illness in a family. So let's look more specifically at communication at different stages of development. Infants and toddlers, they don't have the capacity to understand that a parent has been diagnosed with a specific illness, yet they're very sensitive to changes in routine. For example, if mommy always gets her son out of bed in the morning and all of a sudden she's not at home or able to care for him, this will likely cause her son some distress. When schedules and routines are altered, the young child may become more irritable. Sleep patterns may change. They may appear clingier. The sooner that new routines can be established, the better. Finding caregivers that could help the parent maintain a consistent schedule with the same daily routines will provide the very young child with the greatest comfort. So while you can't tell a very young child what's going on like you can an older child, in very important ways, parents can work to make sure that their world remains as warm and secure as possible in the midst of any crisis. Let's move to preschoolers. They have a wonderful imagination, and they experience most things in terms of how it affects him or her directly. They also come up with their own logic for why certain things happen. So the combination of imagination and their own logic is referred to as magical thinking. Therefore, to respond to this way of thinking, explanations should be simple, direct, and clear for the child to understand, with less details than an older child needs, but all couched in a matter-of-fact but loving way. Children also do best when the focus is on the immediate future. For example, mommy will have to stay in the hospital for a few days to get some special medicine. I feel fine right now, and we could talk on the phone. Or, on the days that I get medicine, Daddy will be with me and Aunt Sally will be here with you. Again, letting them know what will be happening next makes it easier. Once the child seems to understand that the parent has an illness and will need special medicine, the parent could build on the words used during this conversation during later conversations. For example, remember when I told you that the doctor will be giving me some medicine? That name of the medicine is, and you could add in whatever medicine you're on. Building on information the child has already heard and is now familiar with is often better than giving too much information up front. So how might the preschool child respond to this information? When changes are made in routine or parent's availability, you may see some aggressive behavior. Bedwetting, thumb-sucking, withdrawal, getting up during the night. They're not uncommon. It can be a response to stress. Some children may worry that they are sick themselves. If parents notice a change in their child's behavior, they could acknowledge it in just a supportive way so the child does not feel embarrassed by it. For example, coming into the parent's bed at night may be the child's way to make sure that their mom and dad are still there. Parents can gently bring the child back to his or her room and let them know that everything is okay. If regressive or concerning behaviors continue, the parent might want to talk to their pediatrician or a counselor. So next, the elementary school child. An age of vigorous inquiry, and the parent needs to be prepared to answer many questions. Whereas the preschool child may not be able to connect facts with emotions, the school-age child begins to use words to express many feelings. Changes in routine can also be difficult for this age group. Preparing in advance carpools or who will be at home with the child is helpful. Having a calendar where the child can visually see who will be at the house on a given day or who will be picking them up from a particular activity can reduce anxiety as well. It's often helpful to let the school know of any changes at home so they could be sensitive to any changes in the school's behavior, mood, interaction with peers, concentration, or quality of schoolwork. Therefore, it's good for the school to have the most accurate facts. Most importantly is creating the environment in your family that both welcomes and encourages your child to ask his or her questions, not just about the illness, but about anything. Letting him or her know that you like to hear those questions. They'll be encouraged and feel comfortable asking more questions when they hear responses such as, "What a good question. I love to hear your ideas." But also try to understand what the real question is that your child is thinking about. Ask questions like, "Can you help me understand what got you wondering or curious about that?" Prepare the child for days where the parent may not be able to do the things they were used to do together, or they may be less emotionally available. For example, there may be days where Daddy is really tired in the morning and may not be able to make your favorite breakfast, but Grandma will make it for you on those days. Or some of Daddy's medicine can make him feel really moody. Children who are prepared in advance for practical as well as emotional changes will have less anxiety when these things occur. If a parent knows that there are specific activities they won't be able to do with their child, trying to find substitute activities that they could do together can allow for different but special times. So moving on to adolescence, a time of significant emotional and developmental change when young individuals move towards gaining independence, formulate their self-identity, strengthen peer and romantic relationships, and begin to define their future role in life. Having to face a potentially life-threatening illness in a family at this time can challenge healthy adolescent development. Most adolescents have the ability to understand the immediate and potential future consequence of a parent's diagnosis. Chances are some of their schoolmates may have had a parent with a serious illness. In a media swift society, most teens will go to the internet and seek information.
We may be having some technical problems with Dr. Wana's line. We'll be reconnecting her shortly, but I think what we'll do in the interim is bring Kathy Nugent on, and we will then have Dr. Wiener conclude her remarks when she comes back on. So I'm going to introduce Kathy Nugent, and Kathy Nugent is Director of Social Service, New Jersey, of Cancer Care. And Ms. Nugent is going to address the basic needs of children and teens whose parent or loved one has cancer, has MPN, tools to help children and teens cope with MPN in the family, Cancer Care's free psychosocial services provided by professional oncology social workers, and resources for parents. It's my pleasure now to bring on Ms. Nugent.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you to everyone for participating in today's workshop. The diagnosis of MPN to a parent or a loved one can be devastating for a family and certainly can rock a child or teen's world. As mentioned throughout the program today, kids worry about who will take care of them, did they do anything to cause the MPN, and is it contagious? Children and teens who are coping with MPN in the family have special needs and concerns, and they need to be reassured that all feelings are okay and it's okay to be a kid. Before I speak about some of the ways we can help our kids cope with MPN in the family, I would like to spend just a few minutes addressing the needs of the parent in caring for our children. We as parents are role models for our children. If we are comfortable discussing illness, we will make it so much easier for our children to talk about illness. We need information to cope better, and our children are no different. If we, by our example, can express our own feelings and talk about illness, then we give our children permission to also express their feelings and concerns. This is not always easy for us as adults, but we do need to strive to be more open and communicate with our children. So how do we get support for ourselves during this stressful time? It's easy to forget that there are people who care about you. So here's a list of some ways you can get support. Write a list of family, friends, colleagues, ministers, rabbis, teachers, and others who may give you support. Write a list of ways in which you'd like that support. Maybe you need someone to talk to, someone to help you with chores around the house, someone to drop off or pick up your kids from school and other activities, maybe someone to babysit so that you can get out for a few minutes, maybe someone to meditate with. How about someone to have a few laughs with? And certainly, maybe you'd like to join a support group. Sometimes it can be difficult to ask for help, but if we do not let people know what we need and how they can help us, we end up with no support and feel very much alone and forgotten. Remember, you can't support your kids if you don't get support for yourself first. You may have heard the story about boarding a plane with your children, that each time you board an airplane, you're informed that in the event of an emergency, you should provide yourself with oxygen before attempting to help your children. When faced with serious illness, you need to be able to care for yourself first in order to care for your children. So now let's get back to our kids. So why is it important to have good communication with our children? Fear of the unknown is always worse than the known. Children can create monsters when they do not know what's going on, and we call that magical thinking. Dr. Werner had noted this earlier in her presentation. The energy being used to shelter, protect, and guard our kids can be used in giving support. Remember, we're really not protecting our kids, but rather building walls and blocking communication if we're not able to talk to them and think we're protecting them. Good communication models healthy coping through expression of feelings. And naming the feelings with words takes away some of the power, even though we often feel that saying it will make it more powerful and more real. It actually makes it easier to cope because we can share and work out solutions. Coping is easier when we can talk about it. Here are some simple tips that can help you with your children in coping with MPN. Be available to listen. Be observant. Be alert and pay attention to all communication. Be patient. Be emotionally honest. Be supportive. Follow a schedule which reflects the normal routine as closely as possible. Explain your treatment plan and how it may affect your life and their life. Let your children know that they will be taken care of. Review with your children who they can turn to for support if you are not available. Make a list together of these people. Maybe it's a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, other relatives, friends, or a teacher. Show them that there are people who care about them and can help them. Speaking of teachers, make sure that your children's teachers are aware of your illness. Our children spend so much time in the school environment, and any changes in behavior can be noticed by their teachers, who can then in turn let you know that your child is struggling. Reassure your children. They cannot catch MPN like a cold, and they did nothing to cause the MPN. As always, show your children a lot of love and affection. Let them be kids. Cancer Care has programs to help families cope with MPN. The Cancer Care programs for kids are part of a free professional service provided by Cancer Care, but focuses on the particular needs of children and parents. Cancer Care offers practical support, education, and advice to parents, and also counseling to children and teens to help them understand. Families who live near one of the Cancer Care offices may also participate in one of our therapeutic events, which teach children and parents how to talk to each other about MPNs. The MPN experience often leaves us feeling all alone. At Cancer Care, people can gain emotional support, insight, and reassurance by participating in our free telephone and online support groups. Cancer Care offers these support groups to people with MPN, their families, friends, caregivers, survivors, and the bereaved. All of our support programs are moderated by professional oncology social workers. Cancer Care Connect booklets contain frequently asked questions, a glossary of photos and illustrations. The booklet, Helping Children When a Family Member Has Cancer, can be ordered from our website or downloaded free of charge. You can also download from our website the Cancer Care fact sheets, Helping Children Understand Cancer, Talking to Your Kids About Your Diagnosis, and Helping Teens When a Parent Has Cancer. The MPN experience can be an economic burden to families. Financial assistance is also available from Cancer Care. Cancer Care can help reduce the costs associated with transportation to and from treatment, home care, and child care. In addition, a Cancer Care social worker can point you to other resources in your community that may offer financial assistance. More information about all of our services at Cancer Care can be found on our website at www.cancercare.org. or you can call and speak to one of our professionally trained oncology social workers by calling our 1-800-HOPE line at 1-800-813-HOPE. Here's some other helpful resources that I have found helpful. The Courage Lion program. This is a program that we've used here at Cancer Care to help children express their feelings and fears around illness. The program entails storytelling, and I think storytelling for younger children particularly is an important technique that we all can use. The book Courage Pockets introduces the story of Duffy the young lion who faces challenges in recovering from an injury. Duffy is reminded by his mother of his courage in being the first of her cubs to learn to swim and given a river stone as a symbol of his courage and bravery. In reading about Duffy's feelings and experiences, children have the opportunity to identify and communicate about their own feelings and situations. When read by an adult or a parent, the book offers valuable opportunities for children and caregivers to discover and validate feelings, concerns, coping strategies, and expand self-awareness and encourage sharing and discussion. During Cancer Care's programs, the children are given their own river stone and pouch and are encouraged to put their feelings and worries in the pouch. This program has been used for all ages in helping children and adults alike in facing times of crisis. You can go to the website www.courageLion.org to order the book, Duffy the Lion, it's a little stuffed animal, as well as a CD and river stones. Another technique that I have used with parents is the writing of a gratitude diary. The idea behind the gratitude diary, or counting your blessings diary, is to every day write down three good things that have happened during the day, something you are grateful for. It could be something you did for someone during the day, or you may be grateful for something that somebody else did for you during the day. One parent that I worked with who had cancer, she used this idea of the daily gratitude with her two young children. She encouraged them to each day write on a post-it note one good thing that they were grateful for or happy about and put it on the refrigerator so that the whole family could see this. She reported that this daily practice of gratitude helped the family to refocus on positive events in their daily lives and what they did have as a family and not on her cancer. This practice of giving gratitude can be helpful for all of us, adult and children alike. Another great resource is Kids Connected, which the website is www.kidsconnected, and I'll spell that. It's KIDSKONNECTED.org. This is a nonprofit organization in California, but they do have support groups throughout the country in different states, and what they do is provide support for children who have a parent with cancer. It's really, they have a wonderful newsletter, as I mentioned, support groups in various states throughout the country and summer camps. They also have a very nice website with resources, a full list of books for parents and children and teens, which I think can be very helpful to many of us. Again, that would be found on their website. And in closing, I would just like to remind everyone that kids are incredibly resilient and can cope if we are simply honest with them. It's okay to tell kids what's really going on. And to quote Mr. Fred Rogers from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, whatever is human is mentionable. Whatever is mentionable is manageable. And remember that Cancer Care is here to help you.
Oh, thank you so much, Kathy. That was really wonderful and very informative and very helpful to everyone. And thank you. I know there will be questions for you during the Q&A as well. Thank you. And now we're going to bring back Dr. Lori Wiener from the National Cancer Institute. And we're delighted to have you back again. And if you would continue on, because your information was so helpful, Dr. Wiener.
I would be glad to. So we left off at adolescence, and I want to just say, Kathy, that was beautiful, and you'll hear that we have very similar thoughts and do welcome your questions when I'm done. So when talking with the adolescent child, just to make sure that their facts or understanding is accurate, it's okay and important for the parent to say, I don't know yet, when answers are not available. This is also an age where we might see a teen vacillate between wanting to do everything they can to help a parent to resenting the fact that their own life may be negatively impacted by a parent's illness. They can act unsympathetic or with a lack of understanding of why their parents' illness needs to change things. Some parents have said their teen's first response was, are you going to be okay? And that, are we still going to be able to take Jack to the beach with us this summer? And particularly for children whose parents may have limited financial resources, concern about what would happen if the parent can't work, if they will have enough money. Teens struggle to find their own identity and a place of belonging amongst their peers. Having teens who are more preoccupied or seem to be more preoccupied by how a parent's illness may affect their own schedule rather than how their parent is physically and emotionally doing can be frustrating for families. Yet many times, this attitude or anger is hiding tremendous fearfulness about the illness. Patience and appreciation for their way of coping can go a long way. Keeping lines of communication open is essential. Older children and adolescents may prefer to talk to peers. If the teen is not comfortable talking with anyone, finding someone that they can trust can be very helpful. Other teens may be afraid to leave the home, concerned that something may happen to the parent when they're away. And such teens may need to be encouraged to continue with their activities. Words such as, I promise to let you know if things change, gives them permission to still be a kid and also know that they will be included in major changes or events. For all ages, the medical facts about MPN and the treatment are easier to discuss than the emotional side of all of this. It is okay for a parent to ask a child if they're scared. It's okay to ask if they're worried. It is more important for a child to know that it's okay to be scared or worried, and talking about their fears won't make their fears come true. It is okay to ask if they're angry and to let the child know that angry thoughts are normal and sharing these angry thoughts can't hurt their parent or make them sicker. Some children can keep these thoughts to themselves for fear of upsetting their parent. By a parent sharing that they too get scared and worried, gives the child permission to express their own deepest concerns. So I'd like to end my few minutes by saying that well-supported children who are included in important conversations with their parents can continue to be emotionally healthy and secure during their parents' treatment and beyond. I, too, have been so impressed by how tremendously resilient these included children have been. Remember to maintain normal schedules and routines as much as possible. Develop a good, well-informed support system for yourself and your child. Use simple language that makes sense to your child. Protect important family times when you can connect with your child. And keep communication open and honest with plenty of opportunities for your child to ask questions and for you to check their understanding. Each of these will help you and your family to not only get through some difficult days together, but to thrive and to grow as a family unit.
Thank you, Dr. Weiner. That was lovely as well. You really are both just amazing speakers, and thank you so much, all of you. And now we have time for questions. We actually have a lot of time for questions, and I'm going to ask Stephanie to explain to everybody how to queue up for questions. We're going to try to take as many of your questions as possible, and if we don't get your question or you think of a question tomorrow or the next day or next week, please do call us at Cancer Care at 1-800-813-HOPE. And I'll repeat that number again on multiple occasions so that you won't feel like you only heard it once. But for now, let's see how many of your questions we can take. And Stephanie, if you could explain to everybody how to queue up for questions, and if you could bring all of our speakers on board so that we can all address the questions that are being asked. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. Again, to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone.
And we have a question from one of our online participants, and the question is, I used to regularly attend all school functions my kids were involved in. I haven't been able to attend and feel like I'm letting my children down. How do I address this issue with them? So I'm going to ask Dr. Weiner if he would address that first, and then Kathy, if you would, Ms. Nugent, if you would also add to that as well. It's an important question.
It's a very important question. I thank you for asking it because it's a question that most parents ask of themselves. Importantly is to be able to find the days or the certain events that are most important to the child for you to be able to be there. And if you can't be there, if there's somebody else that they would feel comfortable being there. Some children have felt very supported by being able to have the event at the school being videotaped. And so they can then come home and show it to the parent, and they can go through it together so they feel like they didn't miss anything, anything they may have said or performance they may have been participating in. And also just to be able to ongoingly be able to talk together about the upcoming events and the ones that would be most important, if possible, to be there, and the people they're most comfortable to be able to participate in their place.
Excellent. Thank you. And Kathy, do you want to add anything to that?
I think that Dr. Erna has really said it all. I was going to suggest taping. I think that's always an important tool that parents can use if they're not able to go there personally. But I think Dr. Werner has said it all.
Okay. That's a great group here. Okay. And actually, Dr. Gowen, do you want to add anything to that, just in terms of just, being able to work with the healthcare team sometimes to see if there are important occasions coming up, if somehow the team knows that, if there are any things that they can sometimes help with so that there being some preparation for an important a time like that?
Well, I think, first off, it's just really important to recognize that fatigue is part of the illness, and to allow yourself to take a time and rest if need be, and then communicate your symptoms to your healthcare provider, because certainly that's how we monitor the disease and really gauge our therapies.
Thank you. Excellent. Okay, thank you so much. We have another question from one of our online participants. I am currently in remission, but my daughter wants to know if the MPN will come back. What should I tell her? So, again, this is a communication issue, so I'm going to ask Ms. Nugent and Dr. Weiner, and actually Dr. Gowen as well, to kind of weigh in on this one, because it's an important question. And so.
Yeah, I would say that certainly I think the patient is in remission. That's a wonderful thing, and I would certainly encourage the patient to talk about that this is a good time in the family's lives, and certainly say that that you would reassure the child that you're going to do everything that we can to stay well, and we'll be working with her doctors, and if there are any changes in the future, that the children will be certainly encouraged and told about any changes that take place so that they can respond as family, so they're not left out of the communication. So I think that, again, that's the one, I think, important point that we're really stressing, is the need for communication between the parent and the child.
I would agree with that. I would also just ask the child, that's a great question. Can you tell me what you're thinking about or why you asked that question now? Because there may be something about a parent going out of remission that worries them the most. They may be afraid that something may happen that they won't be informed about, or that they may miss something, and they may feel like they need to be hypervigilant themselves to look for something. So I always like to go back to the child and find out, what may prompt them to ask that question at this time.
Excellent. And Dr. Gowen, did you want to add anything as well?
Sure. I think what's important to recognize is that NPN is really not a curable illness, in that it's a treatable illness, and it's really a long-term, ongoing process of keeping the disease under control. And I think we're really gaining a lot of new therapies and a lot of hope for a long-term control in the upcoming decades.
Excellent. Very helpful. Thank you. And we have another question from one of our online participants. So how can I have positive and honest communication with my family and children when I'm scared, tired, and stressed myself? Mm-hmm. Dr. Weiner, do you want to take that first?
Well, I think that Kathy addressed that beautifully when I was able to come back on and get to hear about one of the things that she said, and that was the essential part about being able to take care of yourself so that you can support your child. So it's a very insightful comment by the participant, and also one that I know that other people feel and experience on a day-to-day basis. Being honest means that there may be days that you're not feeling well, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to change that per se, and if all your energy is trying to change that, that's not going to make today a very happy day. It's being able to say, I'm having a tough day today, but that's okay. Tomorrow could be a better day. And that's a very important message for your child, that it's okay not to feel well one day, but that doesn't mean every day is going to be that way. Mm-hmm. And it is finding ways to be able to help support yourself. And for everyone, that's going to be different. Kathy mentioned different ways, but you may have additional ways of things that help you to be able to distract from the day-to-day worries or fears that you're having. And also just finding other people you could be able to talk to who share some of the same feelings that you do and experiences, because they're the experts, and they may have some other ideas of way to be able to get through those days so that you feel better and can feel like you could better support your child.
And Kathy, do you want to add to that as well?
Yes, I was just going to say, certainly, as I mentioned, being able to get support for yourself, whether that is joining a support group, but certainly talking about those fears with possibly a social worker or a therapist can certainly help the parent deal with their fears. And then, again, getting back to what I mentioned about that gratitude, I think many of us have to deal with heavy things in our lives, difficult crisis in our lives, and being able to not focus all the time on the MPN or the cancer, but rather putting aside and looking at some of the things in our life that we can be grateful for. And that's a wonderful lesson to give our children, too. Even in the worst of times, we can find something to be grateful for. And I think if the patient, the parent who is dealing with the MPN can get support, they can then be able to support their children and put their fears to the side, address them, but also to be able to be there for their children and offer hope.
Excellent. Really, and now there's another question from one of our online participants who are really very active, and they have been very active in a lot of our programs. My son is experiencing behavioral problems at school since discussing my MPN diagnoses. What can I do? Again, Lori, do you want to take that first?
Sure. So it is, and I appreciate that call as well, and it's good that you found out that your child is having behavioral problems at school. Oftentimes parents don't know because the school personnel don't, you know, feel like they don't want to burden the family anymore, or you don't find out until there's a major problem. So what is a behavioral problem at school? If their behavior has changed, or sleep patterns has changed, or grades are changing, or the way they're relating to other people is changing, that's just a sign of stress. That's a sign of worry. That's a sign of maybe feeling angry or just not knowing how to be able to put words to those emotions. So it's finding somebody and a way for that child to be able to open up and to be able to express what it is that they're most concerned about, most angry about, most frightened about, so they could be able to learn to channel those feelings in a different way than getting into trouble at school. And sometimes people, you know, more unconsciously may end up getting in trouble in school so they can come home because they're worried about the parent. Other times it's because they're just mad and they just don't have an avenue to be able to work those through. Other times it's adolescence, you know, in addition to being able to find out something else has, you know, impacted themselves or impacted their family. So knowing it is 50% of the battle or more. Being able to then say, okay, you know, let's be able to get to the bottom of this so that we don't all have to suffer and we could all grow together from this.
Excellent. And Kathy, did you want to add anything?
The only other piece I would add to that is sometimes the teachers and the school need some education around illness also. And maybe there are people in the community, such as one of the things that we do here at Cancer Care is we can go out to schools and talk to the teachers and the staff to help them to better understand what children are dealing with at home when they're dealing with MPN and other cancers. So that would be something that I would think might be helpful too, is to engage the school a little bit more in understanding so that therefore they can be available to the child, that maybe there are counselors or social workers, someone at the school that can assist the children who are dealing with MPNs at home.
And Kathy's point is very well taken. Schools can be a tremendous resource. I do caution with the adolescents that you may want to be able to talk to them first. Some don't want to be, you know, pointed out or any attention given to them. Or being pulled out to see a counselor, and they may be very upset by that. They don't want anything different or any attention given to them. Others would just welcome people understanding what's going on at home. So the school being aware is wonderful, but before you get the school involved where the child may be singled out in a way, just to be able to make sure they know about it in advance.
Excellent point. And, you know, this program, you know, many of you who are listening on the program, if you may live in areas where indeed there is someone who could work with you and the school with the child's permission. But if you are in an area where there isn't anyone, the program itself, this workshop that you're listening to today, it actually is available on both telephone replay 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's also available actually as a podcast. So if someone lives in an area where perhaps there is a school and the personnel are interested and your family and children are interested in the school learning more about it, they are welcome to listen to this. It's a free program, and it's accessible on our website. And we'll be sending you information about that. But that's important for you all to know. But I think Kathy's point is if you're somewhere where people can come out and work with you with your child's permission or the school, but if the school wants to just get some information, just general information about helping children cope and teens cope, that this would be an interesting program for them to listen to get some information as well. So thank you for having asked that excellent question and for the great answers as well. Thank you. So with another online question, I don't want to disclose everything about my MPN to my children to burden them. But on the flip side, I feel like I'm hiding something from my children. What should I do? So again, Laurie, could you address that, please? And then
excellent question. And if your feeling is that you don't want to give more information at this point in time, trust your gut. You know your children. But provide enough information that you can build on later. Acknowledge that, you know, mom has an illness, or mom doesn't feel well, or mom has something wrong, and give it whatever name you can. But enough information that you can then go back. Remember when I told you mom has an illness? Well, this illness needs to take certain kinds of medicine called. As long as each conversation can begin with, remember when I told you, you won't get yourself into trouble. Enough information that you could be able to build on and to be able to build on, and that they could feel like you're not holding something back or hiding from them.
Excellent. And Kathy?
I really can't add anything to what Laurie said. I think it was wonderful. Exactly. Just give them the information as they need it. And I think your tips are perfect.
Now, it is summertime now, and we have a question from one of our online participants about this being summer, although I realize people from all different parts of the world, so it may be different temperatures everywhere. But we have a question. My family has a summer vacation coming up, and I won't be as active at the beach, biking, as last year due to my MPN. How can my family prepare for vacation that will certainly have a different tone to it? So, again, Kathy, do you want to start with that, and then Dr. Wiener, and then actually, and then Dr. Gowen, if you could say something about just preparing for vacation in general while being treated for MPN.
Sure. Yeah, I would say what activities could they possibly do, I think, to look at the fatigue level. And really, as a family, they can sit down and decide what are some things that they can do that are different. Maybe they're not able to be as physical as they were in prior vacations, but certainly I'm sure there are some activities that they can do together as a family. And if not as a full family, just explain the side effects and the fatigue that you're dealing with, and maybe another parent or another relative that might be with you can be with the children to do a little bit more active activities.
Thank you.
Laura, you might add to that.
So I love family meetings. I love when families have family meetings. And they're not necessarily about bad things that are happening. They're just checking in. You know, it could be in a Friday night dinner. It could be on a Sunday morning brunch. It could be just something that becomes a routine for the family to check in. How was your week? How are things going on? And in such a situation, it could be talking about things they're really looking forward to, like an upcoming vacation. And in terms of being able to, what a parent could do or may not be able to do, there may be very well certain activities that you'll no longer be able to do because of fatigue or for other reasons. But is it really the activity or is it the special time that you'd be able to have together? Sometimes it may be the activity. You can no longer water ski, for example. But there could be substitute activities that they could really look forward to as well. it may be, you know, going in a, you know, up in an air, I'm trying to think of, you know, those kites that you go up in, or it could be if it's a beach vacation, or it could be going out for ice cream and to the boardwalk and having special times that you'll have together. I think talking about it up front, that, you know, there may be some things that, you know, mommy's not able to do this time, maybe too tired to do, and I don't want to disappoint you. What are some other things we could do together that would be special? And again, up to talking about it up front and planning. But for everyone to think about having family meetings. And so it's a time of just open communication. And when families are used to having family meetings, they'll hold things and say, ah, I'm going to bring this up next week. And it, most of the time it's things they're looking forward to. But it's an opportunity to be able to explore any changes that are anticipated or any changes that are currently occurring.
Thank you. And Dr. Goen, do you want to say something about just vacation preparing for vacation when living with MPN and just
sure.
And talking with one's doctor about what's realistic and so one can add that to the planning in terms of realistically what can do and also taking any meds or any kinds of things that one should do proactively and also being out in the sun, all those kinds of things.
Exactly. You know, going on vacation, particularly in the summertime, it's going to be a lot of more outdoor activity, probably some pool time. And so certainly staying hydrated is very, very important, particularly if you're on medications, which I'm sure you are. Sunscreen, obviously very important, and you should be very proactive in utilizing that. And then certainly knowing your limits and really trying not to supersede them when you're out with your family, trying to keep up with them is very important. And I agree with Dr. Weiner and Kathy that adjusting your activity is really necessary, and just, again, knowing your limits and communicating your symptoms to your family so you can all work together.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank all of our speakers. You've just an extraordinary team, which we will want to bring back again for other programming. And I also want to thank all of our online participants who really asked such really thoughtful and important questions that really helped everybody on the call. I want to thank all of you who've been listening as well. I do want to remind you that this is a one-hour workshop and that in planning a program like this, we know that you have many, many needs that go far beyond the scope of a one-hour program. And so I do want to encourage all of you to take advantage of the services you can access from Cancer Care, and you can simply call us at 1-800-813-HOPE. We often say we're simply a telephone call away. And for those of you internationally, please, you can visit our website, www.cancercare.org, or all of you can do that as well, and you can also connect with a social worker in that way as well. We have lots of oncology social workers who are here to help you and to help you to just talk through some concerns you may have. We offer individual counseling and group counseling on the phone and online. We also offer practical help to people, practical problem solving with issues and like some of the discussions we've had today. We also have lots of materials and booklets, and we do lots of these workshops as well. Most importantly, as we conclude the program, I would not want anyone to think that you're alone in coping with MPN. I want you to know that you're part of our community of support, and we're all very accessible to you. I also want to remind you that we do have Part 6 coming up, which is recognizing the different stages of your MPN, and that program takes place on June 25th, and at the same time, the 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. So I encourage all of you to sign up if you haven't already for that program and for many of the other programs we have coming up. And you'll be hearing about them. You'll be getting an email from us about those upcoming programs. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day and hope this has been helpful to all of you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may now disconnect, and everyone have a wonderful day.